Is your game an old game, though?
My game? Like, do we have to, do we have a top three for this?
No.
No, okay. Did you just pick one game?
Yeah.
And like, eight.
From retro myths to modern day masterpieces, we'll be breaking down the universe's most pondered gaming questions. Join us as we journey through our childhood memories. We'll be diving into what it meant to us, growing up through the dawn of the internet. The Cake is a Lie podcast with your hosts, Gareth and Jamie.
Welcome on into episode six.
Six. Yeah, six. This is episode six.
Episode six. This already is titled Redux, the games that just won't die. And this is basically going to be the games that we keep coming back to and we keep playing. So imagine this, right? You have your pile of shame and you have all these amazing games that people are recommending to you, right? And you log on and you have 2-3 hours free and you think, this is the time I'm going to start this new adventure. And then in the corner of your eye, you catch that little tile on the Xbox menu. And you're thinking, fuck it, I'll play that game again.
Always happens, always.
Every time.
I tend to, and it's the thing, it's just like you said, it's just with all these great titles and recommendations, you're just kind of, do I sink my teeth in now and bury in a few hours? Or, because you know, like, well, I'm Murderford, I kind of get, I play to excess and I get actually tired of the game. I kind of become a little worn playing it. So I kind of either don't end up going back and finishing the game, or the fact I only have X amount of time, I'll just jump on and quickly, you know, throw an hour or 30 minutes.
You have this limited time. So you're like, do I risk playing something new, or do I play the thing that I know I'm going to enjoy? You get me? So like, I played Titanfall 2 countless times and it's just like, it's such a good story game. I know it's good. And when I'm like, oh, I kind of forget bits of this now, jump back in, play it again, rather than playing something like Doom, which I've not really played, you know, it's the easier choice, I'd say. But tell me, right, you like replaying games, obviously, that's the whole point of the episode, but how do you feel about replaying the game when you're replaying the original versus a remaster versus a remake? So like the remaster being when they just upgrade the graphics a bit and it's basically the same game, and the remake being like totally redone. So for instance, let's take like Resident Evil 2. How do you feel about that? Like playing it when it's a remake versus playing it when it was original. Do you get the same feeling going back to like a remake as opposed to, or does it have to be the original to invoke those feelings?
I think it depends on the game. Like if it was like Super Mario now or something, like, I think it depends on the level of graphics too, because it depends if how improved is the graphics. Does it look like an entirely different game? Have they gone completely different color scheme? Or is the remaster true to its original where it's still, everything is graphically the same tone, same vibrance, same aspect of the original. But my most recent thing is Alan Wake. I mean, I have the original Alan Wake 1 and it's not to say I'm struggling to get through it. I am enjoying it. It's just, I think it looks a little tired for me. And I think it's not to say then, because I don't mean to say that like a game can't be good if it doesn't look good. Like, I think, you know, I'm so used to playing modern titles. That's what I kind of look for.
Sure. For me, it's kind of the opposite with Alan Wake. So I have like that. I like the atmosphere that comes with the 360 graphics, you know, where the lights are kind of glowy as opposed to like sharp and RTX style, as opposed to like ray tracing style, if you get me.
Like realistic.
Yeah, as opposed to realistic, I like that glowy game effect to a certain extent, if that makes
kind
sense.
Kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like soft lighting, I suppose. It gives that kind of atmospheric kind of softness to the overall kind of.
And it can feel a lot cozier in many games, that kind of soft lighting, you know?
Yeah. Like, no, I get that. But like, I think, especially like an older game, like they still do it in modern games where like obviously like Alan Wake is kind of like the light is like a lighthouse. It's a beacon that you have to kind of get to. Obviously, sure, it's your safe space. Where like in modern games now, they have something overly obvious where they've like, I don't know, like a big fucking yellow bar on top of a ledge that you know I can grapple up or I can mount it. But like games, what game, Garrett, have you been, draws you back?
So there's game, one like category I want to talk about first, right? So it's a category, it's not really a game, but it's like collectathons, right? And there's a lot of collectathons that take me back not only to childhood, but are just very nice environments to be in. So if you look at like Spyro, Mario 64, Crash Bandicoot, Banjo-Kazooie, they're just nice places to kind of chill and be. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like it obviously denotes that kind of nostalgic kind of feeling. Like it's a game that you would have played as a child, kind of your first gaming experiences, really. Yeah, I get that. It's just a nice environment, or when you're playing Ape Escape, you know.
Yeah. Same kind of thing. The Ape Escape is technically like a collectathon as well, you know, just a bit more story added, a bit more progression of gadgets and so on. But
it's not like it's a game that's always going to have a happy ending, as it were.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be tragic. It's not going to be dark and gloomy.
It's also not like stressful, you know, like I don't want to come home after a very stressful day and turn on like Resident Evil 2 and be trying to speed run the thing and like stressing myself out even more. You know, I just want something simple, something I know. But interesting thing about Spyro, right? Because I recently played the Reignited Trilogy and I 110% did the first game. Because actually, it's not a 100% game. There's actually an additional 10% at the end of the game. 10? I can't remember now. I think it's an extra secret world. And then you go to it. And then when you do everything there, it's 110%.
That's
so it's kind of weird. Yeah, it's pretty nice though. But in the original development, Spyro was actually green. So he was a green dragon.
Yeah.
But in the playtesting, he blended in too much with the grass because all the world is like grass. So they changed him to purple. And the sheep that are running around always made no fucking sense to me, right? So you have like sheep running around and they're just bouncing around the place and you can chase them and you can eat them for...
it's a dragon's natural food.
Is it? Is it?
It is. It's not.
I would have thought people, Jamie, and it was actually supposed to be people, but Sony had like a censorship at the time where in a kid's game, you couldn't show people getting injured. So you had to have, they had to change them out for sheep in the end. That's why it kind of didn't make sense to me, I guess. I saw through their bullshit.
Don't get PETA involved.
Yeah. One thing though that does draw me back to games is speedrunning, right? So like going back to a game and just trying to cheese everything and trying to exploit the game and see how quick you can get through it. And that's where kind of remakes fall off a little bit for me because a lot of the speedrunning mechanics, like if you take Super Mario 64 on the N64, the remakes for that, like a lot of the techniques and glitches you use in that to speedrun it can't be done in the revised versions. So it's not identically the same game. Yeah. And if you take like another one like Crash Bandicoot, in the Insane trilogy, feels very much the same, but it's actually a more difficult game because the jump mechanics were reworked because they were too clunky bringing it up to like modern day. So while everything does feel very similar, the jump mechanics have changed and it led to like some levels being really, really difficult because some of those jumps were like exactly timed and exactly spaced to just barely make and they get like
crazy,
much more difficult. There's much more tolerance for error, you know. So
it's kind of good.
It can sometimes be that takes away from the replayability a little bit, I think.
Yeah, because I suppose, you know, I love watching, you know, you can watch kind of speed runs, but I'm not sure, I think it's actually on IGN they do it, but they've got videos where they get the devs on themselves and they watch people speed run their game. And
Yeah.
There's some really good ones. There's one in Control now as well. Control is a game that was on the pass. You've telekinesis and other abilities, your gun which kind of morphs and changes.
Which has a connection to Alan Wake. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't. No.
There's a DLC where she goes to the town or something like this.
And that's pretty cool.
It's in the same universe.
Must check it out.
Yeah,
but
there you go.
There's points in the game where even the devs knew, like it was even, devs used it to speedrun themselves through areas of the game as well, which is kind of fun.
Okay, cool.
But like it's crazy. Actually, one of the games I was going to be talking about, actually, I must actually watch it. I only kind of was kind of researching a bit and there's actually a speed run done in this game and I just can't get over how quick they managed to do the speed run. So I'm really eager to actually take a look and it'll go on the podcast or it'll go on the Discord. I will link it there. And but just the other, like you're on about Mario 64.
Yeah.
So the game, there is exploits that you can still do in that game. There is kind of a run up, kind of a, you can go backwards upstairs.
Yes.
You can kind of backwards skirt jump the floor. Yeah, and then you can spam it, or you can roll the keypad as well. But I think
it's got to be really precise, though.
Really, if that's why you can't, like, if you're going to end up emulating it, obviously you can't do that because you can't roll the keyboard or anything.
You can't play it in the same way, basically. This is why, like, all the speed runs are on original software. I don't know if you've ever watched Summoning Salt, have you?
No.
On YouTube.
Never heard of it.
Man, I got to send you some videos. He does these, like, long-form videos. Doesn't release that many, but it will be, like, the history of Mario Brothers 3 speedrunning or something like this, you know? And he goes back to, like, the start, and he follows, like, all the people that broke the record. And you're like, now we were on, you know, the limit of speedrunning. Until this guy came along, and it's like onto the next person who like blows the whole thing wide open again. And it's like now nobody can touch him, and it's just like elevates it through the whole thing. And you're like, what's next? And you're only like halfway through the video, you know. And it's just about like discovering these glitches. And it's even like games like Super Mario Brothers 3, which is donkey's years old at this stage. Like up until 2018, they were still finding exploits and glitches and stuff, which is insane for such a simplistic game that doesn't even have 3D dimensions, you know. It's absolutely nuts. But yeah, I'll send you some videos after.
I've never gotten into kind of speedrunning. Like, it's not that I'd ever want to. I think the only game I ever tried to play quickly was actually Portal 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Because is that not so much exploits, but there was always that kind of, as you're, all the Half-Life games have... or certainly had a thing where if you like bound your jump button to the mouse wheel, so you mouse wheel down.
Yes.
And you put yourself kind of, because when you jump and you move forward, it kind of boosts you a little bit. But if you turn around and keep spam rolling the wheel, it'll actually, you'll pick up speed. You'll actually accelerate. So you people literally traverse the map backwards, speed running. It's insane. I think one of the Portal games was done in like 20, 25 or 30 minutes. And it is like, I'll put that up as well because it's just trippy when you watch it because it's just how quick they're just like planting the portals and it's like they'll get through.
How did you find that experience of speedrunning that game? Because you don't do it that often. But did you get like a buzz from it? Did you get any satisfaction from it?
Well, I didn't get down to that. I think I'd say I got it under an hour. And even at that, it's just when you're trying to watch people do, like they'll do each level. And it's like, I'm not joking. When you actually watch it, it's trippy because they'll enter the level. And before you know it, like literally you could nearly count down from 60 seconds and they're already, you know, getting through the next level. Like it's nuts.
That's into the realm of like, there's techniques involved where you just don't have the physical skill.
No
some memory to do it, you know. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, speedrunners know the levels, like, just they know everything. They time out everything correctly. They know when they enter a level, they know they have to get to this point within 15 seconds, otherwise they'll miss time the lift or something, you know. So it's crazy.
I first actually got into it kind of with the Resident Evil 2 remake. So
you've done that recently enough, like, wouldn't it?
Yeah, recently enough. So you have like the DLC and the DLC is like these one-shot levels where it's like, you know, 10 minutes to get through or whatever. And with these, you have like a certain time to beat to like get an unlockable for the main game. And I started it with that. And then I was like really enjoying like the puzzle factor of that because it's not really based on skill because the characters move quite slowly. You know, there's no fast twitch stuff in Resident Evil 2. So it's more about your strategy and like, when do you use this grenade you have? When is it the most valuable? When can you just like squeeze past someone? When can you fake like a zombie out and get past them and then not use any resources? What's the quickest way? And it's finding that combination of what's the quickest and also not only that, but what you can pull off. Like there's some stuff that was quick for me, but you can only pull it off once every 10 times and then it's too frustrating, you know? So that was the first time. And then I tackled going for the speed run of the main game as Leon. And this is quite long. So you have to do it in under 2.5 hours. And I did it in 2 hours and it has to be on top difficulty. And you can only save 3 times through the whole game. So there's only three places in the game you can save. That's the limit. So you could literally do an hour of the game and then you could die. And then you'd be like, right, back to the checkpoint an hour ago, basically.
I have to show you, Wolf, that did I send you on the one about Wolfenstein? No. There's a guy actually I follow as well. He does, it's not so much speed runnings, but he'll basically play the game on the hardest games and he'll do kind of a let's play of it. Again, I'm going to make a note, we'll put these videos up as well. But he does the hardest difficulty permadeath, instant death. Not only do you die, you restart the game from the start. As in,
okay.
You can't save. You're dead. Yeah. So you could get through the game. You could get right to the end, and if you die, you're starting from the start again. And it's not it's not like, oh, this is difficult. This is insanely hard, because like ammo is seldom. You're getting one banged. If you're anyway out in the open, you have to peek corners. You have to be strategic. It's very entertaining to watch, actually, because he gets so far in the game and you know he just died and you're just like, oh my God. That would be frustrating. I admire people who can actually kind of have the gumption to do it. Like, I just...
It was very frustrating when I was doing it. Like I looked up some strategy for this as well. So it wasn't like I was just like a random save and then I could be doing like 40 minutes of play and then get to one difficult part that I'm always dying. The saves I had planned to be like just before the most difficult parts each time. So it would be just before a boss fight. So then like the pressure's kind of off then, you know, you have to get through the boss fight and then you have the hardest part over with. And then not that it's easy, because you can still die to like stupid things along the way, but it's much less frustrating because you don't have to go 40 minutes and then try to get past the boss. That part's kind of out of the way straight away. So it wasn't so bad, but man, I remember I was on like the last section, that last third of it, for so long. And it was like only 35 minutes left till the end of the game. And I was just trying and trying and trying. And like you'd pull off one thing and then you'd pull off another thing. And you had to do them in a certain way to get through fast. And then you'd pull off the third thing and then the controller would be like slipping out of your hands at that stage. There was so much pressure.
So sweat.
Yeah. And I remember when I passed it and I like the credits came up and I was just sitting there just like staring into space. And I was like, what do I do now? You have to find that love then with another game. But tell me, you spoke a little bit before this, right? So we've kind of talked about speedrunning, collectathons, like nice places to be. But yours is going to be an open world game, right? Correct?
Yeah, actually, all the games I've
all the games are open world.
Would kind of dip back into are all in open world. Yeah.
What are the open world games? What attracts you to them? So dive in with your first one, and we'll talk about it. What exactly?
One game, because we were discussing speedruns, was Elden Ring. If someone's done that game from zero to finish in 29 minutes, which is insane.
I haven't played it now, so you'll have to explain how long the game is and stuff like this.
Like this game, like I don't even know how many hours. I'll actually look up how many hours I have in it. I wouldn't say it's an insane amount. I'd say I probably have about 150 hours. Now, my character is max level. So there's up to, at the time, I think, I'm not sure, there wasn't any extra levels in the new DLC. So 713 is max level. So you'd expect after 7 playthroughs of the game, you'd get to that level. The game is capped. So each time you replay the game, so once you finish it, you get to begin the journey again. It increases the difficulty each time to a maximum of 7. Sure. So after 7, you should be getting about 120, 130 levels each time.
Okay.
So on your first playthrough, you should be expecting to finish the game between the levels 130 and 150, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so if I've got 150 hours in that game, I still couldn't tell you what the lore is. So that's why I kind of go to... And the thing is, you can actually get a lot of lore just from reading gear, like even the armor sets that you pick up, there's actually information in lore written on it. There is, obviously, you can pick up a bit through the cinematics, but all in all, I think people who've actually done their research, it's a lot more entertaining to sit down and watch, you know, 20 minutes or an hour here on different characters throughout the game. I think Elden Ring is insane, and it's just insane. And the thing is, it's on the Xbox. You can download it and play it.
I can actually, yeah, I can.
You can.
I think
actually.
Jedi Survivor is next for me now after Prey.
And Survivor is brilliant as well. And Survivor should be up there as well. I just think, like, with Elden Ring, it's just so varied. It's varied in the way, like, the enemies you fight, there are just so many different enemies, different enemy types. Obviously, the bosses are just phenomenal. And that was actually my first Dark Souls game. I did get my first Souls game. So there was... So Dark Souls was...
Dark
one,
Souls
two,
was the first it, original.
Kind of one of the
two,
first
three.
Ones, yeah. So yeah, I remember actually
had, like,
a buddy...
Bloodborne and a few others.
Bloodborne is one I'd love to play, but a buddy actually gave me Dark Souls 2 and he said it. He gave it to me because he knew how frustrated I'd get playing it. Now, I never played it. I watched him playing it and I was like, nah, this isn't for me at all. And then when Elden Ring came out and just seen such hype about it, I was like, I caved and I bought it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, it is, when it's a game you've just come into, never playing a Souls game before, you get the hang of it relatively quick, like the concept of it, but like still parrying and stuff is just, I'm still crap at parrying. I'm always go for magic classes, so I'm kind of casting the whole time. But I think, like, what kind of these games, with all open world games, I just love, and Elden Ring in particular, I love the environments and how they change. So it's not, it doesn't feel the same. You're literally exploring a world, and within that world, there's like, you know, you have the, and in each area, there's the bosses kind of go with that area, if that makes sense. Like Starscourge,
Redan. Okay, so they're thematical to the surroundings, kind of.
Yeah, so like each boss is in a different zone, really. So you have,
Pokemon.
General Redan, so he's in Caelid, so it's like a very plague-ridden place, and he's infected with rot, yep. So he's okay, just okay, plagued. Then you have, you know, Queen Rani, who, or Queen Renala, who is in Rey Lucaria, so it's like this magic school, and it's brilliant. Like the mechanics are brilliant for it, and the bosses are like unreal. But there's like, again, like when you're watching the lore on YouTube is where you're going to really learn how, like, because they're all siblings, essentially, all the bosses. And why do some look different? Because they're from one kind of family side, mm-hmm. and then the other side. So basically the way it kind of went was that, so Radagon is one of the final bosses, and he basically was with Queen Renala,
mm-hmm.
and they birthed
a few kids.
Or Rani, as you
call her, because you're on like first name.
Rani's his, would be his daughter. So he's a few kids with her, and he leaves Renala then for Queen Marika,
mm-hmm.
and he has kids with her. But like the kids from her are all perfect, I think. Where with Renala, they're like ogres. They're like horns. Ah, are all
okay.
They're all contorted and distorted. And a lot of them have their, like, and then there's reasons to why their horns get excised and stuff. And all this you learn through the lore. So it's like really interesting. So Elden Ring for me would be kind of definitely up there,
mm-hmm.
as
okay,
one of
okay.
a game I keep dipping back into. Because it's so big as well, you can't explore it in one sitting. You can't explore it in a few months. There's always something to find. So I keep gravitating back to it.
I'd say I kind of like it because I haven't played, like, I played a bit of Dark Souls and I didn't really get into it. It just, again, it was just one of these things where it just wasn't the right time for me to be playing it, you know? But like, if you look at Jedi Fallen Order, I put that, I know it's not inherently a Souls game, but it's, I would say it's similar.
It is, you'd consider it.
It's a Castlevania-esque Metroidvania game, but I think the difficulty is there. It is quite difficult. Especially if you go to like the hardest difficulty, it's really
tough.
That's hard.
I haven't done it on the hardest.
I did it on the hardest up until the Vader fight, and then I couldn't beat Vader. It was like impossible. Or not the Vader fight, the sister before Vader that you actually can beat.
Couldn't beat her. She's a pain.
And I just lowered the difficulty because I was on it for days and days, and I was like, all right, I want to move on to something else now. So I do think I'd like that difficulty spike. Because I remember starting Jedi Fallen Order and you're on like the starter training planet, you know,
yeah.
and you go and you fight the big frog looking thing. And I was like, this is obviously for later in the game because this can't be done. And it was like the next thing you had to do. And yeah, you come back then later and you fight it and it's like instant death.
Yeah, I get that.
But I do think, like, I do think I'd like it. Dark Souls and Elden Ring specifically is definitely on my list. Definitely.
Quite Elden Ring is like really, I have Sekiro, but I only got past the first boss. Like literally, I had the game for a while. I kept jumping on, and I kept just like dying to the first boss. So I like gave up. Even like the first kind of elite enemy that you come up against, I struggled on him. So it's a very honest game in that like you start with your sword, and I think you get upgrades, but it's not like it upgrades its strength or anything. You just get like one or two extra kind of moves and abilities. But that's it. Like that's pretty much your weapon. Where like with Elden Ring, you know, you've builds and you've specific talents that you can pick up along the way, spells you can find, incantations you can find.
That's interesting that with Sekiro, it's like, it makes it feel all the more difficult because you're like, you know, if you're playing Elden Ring and you get
this
your
is all I have.
Into, it gives you that sense of power, but you're like, well, I barely got through this last boss and now I have the same shitty fucking sword and I've got to fight the next boss who's 10 times harder, you know?
Yeah, it's just, and the thing is, like, it's if you, the game knows if you're blocking just a whole block, like if you don't block at the right time, you have like a block meter. And as you're getting struck, that meter fills up. And as soon as that fills up, you're defenseless. And the same, you can do the same to your enemy as well. So if you're just holding block, you can block, fine. But your meter will fill up quicker and you become kind of fatigued and vulnerable.
Okay.
But the game, like, there's, again, watch people play that on the hardest difficulty. And it is just, you're like, how, like, there's kind of, you know, particle kind of animations. So, like, I can't even see when their weapon is going to strike in order to block, like.
Yeah, sure.
It is really good, though. So I'm up, there's a boss, or I'm not even sure if it is a boss, but there's a giant bull with horns which are on fire, and that's where I'm stuck at. So extremely early on, and your health bar is tiny. But the game is good in that, like, hence in the title, Sekiro, Die Twice.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to die, and then you can res yourself. But that's it.
Okay.
But this res,
but you get,
can,
like, two deaths, basically.
You have some healing gourds, which you can find throughout the map, so you can replenish your health. But generally, yeah, if you die, you can res. You don't lose your progress on that you've made on your target that killed you, like a boss.
Okay.
So if you die again, you're back to the start again. As in back to the start of the fight.
I think
it is good.
You're really selling it to me, man. I want to play this now and Elden Ring, like, right after this.
I have that as well.
But coming back to Fallen Order, right? I think that could have been very Dark Souls-y, because, like, if you think about that, that started production as a very dark game. Like, you had Dismemberment. You also had, like, the Order 66 parts were supposed to be very, like, twisted and sick. So, like, there was early concepts of, like, storyboards and stuff for cutscenes. And basically, like, in the Order 66 flashback, there was, like, animations of, you know, the clone troopers killing their Jedi Master and then, like, breaking down and screaming on the floor and stuff at what they'd done, and, like, really traumatic kind of themes. And then, of course, Disney came in and, you know, there's
no
allowed. And
we don't want that.
Any dark killings.
The heads stay on their shoulders.
And the early concept for that game as well was actually, they didn't have the sisters in it. So the five sisters, or what are they called? The five Siths. The Knights of Ren. What are they called in it? Is it the sisters?
Yeah, the sisters.
Yeah, it's the sisters. And they weren't supposed to be in the game very early on. It was supposed to be like a bounty hunter, kind of like Boba Fett. And you can see the bounty hunter in, like, the concept art as well, all different, like, you know, designs for him. And basically, it was supposed to be that you were always kind of just one step ahead of this bounty hunter who was trying to hunt you down to kill you because you were the last Jedi, kind of thing. But they scrapped this as well because it was too close to this game, 1313. So do you know about this?
Is that in another Star Wars game?
This was 1313 was basically like an early project. I think it was before Disney took over and then they kind of canceled it. But it was going to be that you were like a bounty hunter style character, and you were basically in like the underworld of Coruscant, and it's level 1313. The game gets its name because that's the area within Coruscant the game is going to take place. And you were basically just going to be hunting, kind of like Prey that we talked about, the concept for Prey, kind of like that kind of thing. And it was the same kind of setup, the movements were the same, but it was a bit more towards Uncharted Tomb Raider kind of play. So you would have had a gun, and it would have been gunplay instead of a Jedi. And a lot of the assets for this were actually reused, making Fallen Order then. So Braca, which is the planet you start on, this shipyard planet, a lot of the, like, alleyways and stuff at the start of that were basically going to be this underground in Coruscant. So it was going to be this slum in Coruscant, which is pretty nice, you know?
And then
It's half the game it should have been.
But I'm thinking back to, like, Fallen Order when I remember, like, it's one of the battleships.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of those in the desert that's down and you have to navigate around it.
Yeah.
One of those destroyers. That to me just like was just like beyond epic. Like it was just,
oh man, that was amazing. The whole game. I don't think there wasn't a huge amount in
Jedi Survivor in the same way.
Okay, no like, spoilers because I haven't played this yet.
But no, it is really good.
Go ahead. Sorry, I do remember that like playing Jedi Fallen Order, and there was so many Easter eggs. Like you would get to, let's say, there's just before you go into this Star Destroyer, I think there's one part where you're like walking up to this lake and there's a crash like clone trooper transport ship.
Mm.
And there's like a crashed TIE fighter or something, or not TIE fighter, but like a Y-wing, X-wing type thing.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool to see all that stuff from like the war and then realize you're after the war and this is all like rotting away. It's just, it's that universe, man. Because I know the Star Wars universe so well. So Jedi Fallen Order is such a nice one to jump into because I just love the exploration and the atmosphere. And it's one I want to go back to now and like get all the collectibles, get all the achievements, really go through it.
I have most of it done in Fallen Order. Look, I have Jedi Survivor as well, so to download it.
I will.
I have everything. I have all the good stuff, I think, anyway.
All the good stuff. So tell me, what's your game? Well, one of mine was Jedi Fallen Order, which I didn't really introduce, but we just talked about it for 10 minutes. Titanfall 2, which I mentioned. And again, Titanfall 2 was a big one for me, like chasing the achievements, you know? Because I like when a game doesn't have too many achievements that it's achievable, you know? I don't like when it's like, kill 50,000, you know, enemies, and it's like, yeah, I don't really have the time for
this. Or like in the Assassin's Creed, it's like, you know, you have to pick up those kind of like feathers that you have to find all over the map, and there's like 100 feathers.
Yeah, this I don't like, you know, like find 150 secret locations. It's like, I'm not combing through the map one square inch at a time to find all this shit. I'm just going to look up a guide to find them all, and then what's the point in doing it at the end of the day, you know?
Just to say you have it done. Yeah.
But do you know, for achievements, do you know what the first ever achievement was on an Xbox game?
For turning on your Xbox?
No, it was specifically in a game. So I don't think you can get achievements. Yeah. So the 360
release. Am I really
going
to be able to get this?
No. No. But I'm going to ask you anyway. Because someone's probably screaming the answer right now. It was a game that came with the 360. And it was called Hexic HD. And it was basically like Candy Crush or one of these games where you like shoot the ball, you know, kind of Tetris-y style. And for completing the training mission in that, there was an achievement called The Apprentice. And this was the first ever Xbox achievement ever made. And the idea for achievements was actually they had this competition in the Microsoft office. And all the dev team got tasked with coming up with a way to incentivize players to keep playing games after they had gotten through the story. Like, what's going to make people go back and 100% these games and explore everything we've designed? And one of them joked and said, let's just make like a to-do list, like an achievement list, and the players can just work on ticking these off then, and you just literally tell them what they have to do. And they were like, yeah, that won't work. How are we going to track all these consoles, what players are doing? How are we going to have these trigger points? And they kind of brushed it off. And then it was like a few weeks later, they came back to the idea and started like fleshing it out, and it became the achievements we know today, which is like now adopted by everyone, like Steam and PlayStation and everything, you know?
There's a guy I used to work with is like his. So I've obviously, you know, we all have on the Xbox, we have gamer scores. So obviously that's just on the basis of your, you know, it's your accumulation of your gamer score from achievements within all games.
Yeah, sure.
And this guy that I used to work with, he's actually like a completionist. Like I'll take a screenshot of his games, my compare list with him. And he's just like, he 100% everything. Like, well, not everything, but the vast majority of his games, like it's 100%. Like,
I don't know what I have the motivation.
And his gamer score is huge. Like he's like, I think mine's just about 100,000. I think his is about double that. Like,
But I think the problem is with me and you, me more so than you, because yours is like double what mine is, and then his is double what yours is. He's playing new games and he's chasing the achievements, right? But I'm logging on and I'm racing around the same lap in Forza for the 2000th time, you know? And I'm getting no achievement for this shit.
You're playing the same level in Space Marine too.
Yeah, you know, I'm doing the same shit just to do it. And like not tracking achievements, not doing anything. But yeah, how many of those games do you think was he just slogging through? Was he just like,
know.
Oh, like, I just need to get this through. There's no way you could be enjoying 100%ing every single game. There's no way.
A lot of the games he even said, because I said it, I goes, God, you're, you know, there's a game that was on the pass. I must get the name of it. But basically, you're kind of like a ninja. Mm-hmm. And you can traverse the maps really quickly. But every level is nearly like a speed run. There's, you know, there's a completion time. And obviously, it goes to your leaderboard. Runner? No, I have those as well. They're really good. But that would be a good example as well. Sir Ghost mm-hmm. Runner. So you can see, you can compare with your friends who done each mission the fastest.
Yeah, I get you.
And I used jokingly, the game I saw he was playing, I said, oh, I'll see what that's like. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, that looks pretty good. And I installed it and started playing it. And next thing I was beating a couple of his things, especially early on, because obviously he was kind of new to the game as I was. And I was getting faster and I used jokingly take a screenshot and said, oh, I beat you here. And next thing he'd go on. And we kind of have a little bit of cat and mouse kind of heat. You know, beat me again and beat me again.
Man, it's
and I come in and
say,
I might get it.
It's funny you say that. It just triggered a memory there. During COVID, you know, I started playing a lot with my friend Toby, who lives in Germany. And we're big into like racing games, right? So we would constantly just be racing, whether it's motorbikes, whether it's like, I eventually got the racing simulator and he has one too. So like the wheel and pedals and everything. And we were just obsessed with it, constantly playing it. Anything to do with driving, whether it's fucking SnowRunner or motorbikes or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And during COVID, of course, you were home all the time. So you'd have lunch break from work and you'd have fuck all to do, basically. We in Ireland at this stage, we weren't even allowed to leave the house like at certain times of the day and stuff. So we were just confined to quarters. And we started this thing. I remember, like, we used to be back and forth at like the time trials and stuff, but we started one and it was basically like you would have a weekly challenge and ride the motorcycle racing game, Ride 4. And we would basically spend the whole week just trying to one up each other's scores. And like, you'd pull off this like amazing lap and then you could see, of course, the other person's ghost. Like, and you'd be trying to say like, oh, how did they get through that corner now at that speed? And then you'd be robbing their tactic and trying to combine it with yours. And like the setup of the bike mattered and everything. It was so much fun just like chasing that like millisecond.
That's good.
You know?
That's striving, and it is. It's a competitive kind of thing, and that's something I love doing as well. Like it's a fun, like even doing that with my colleague. Like it was just a fun kind of interaction. You know, you're just kind of one upping each other, and then it's like, how did you do that? Like, and then or the same when I know when you're doing Titanfall and you're doing the trial at the start, the speed to get through. And then you're kind of looking up tactics then and how to better yourself. But right, my other game, because I only wanted to mention it, was Red Dead Redemption 2.
I haven't, no.
And you can download
it. I was
going
to give
too.
An honorable mention to like GTA and Cyberpunk and stuff. And that's kind of the same realm as Red Dead Redemption 2. For some reason, like when they're released, they keep me playing, but they don't keep me necessarily coming back time and time again, if that makes sense. So like in the long run, they don't keep me hooked for some reason. I don't know why.
Like I said, and the same, I'm currently doing it now as we speak with Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, where I'm enthralled with it. So I'm playing it heavily, but I'm going to burn myself out and I'm going to end up having to, which I kind of already done. I haven't played it now yesterday. I didn't play it today, really. And it's just, there's just so much to do in the game. You're not going to get it done in one sitting. And the same at Red Dead Redemption. It's just, and that's why I mean, that's why I put it on this list. It's a game I constantly come back to because there's just so much to see and do in that game.
Sure.
And just the amount of like the mechanics and realism that they've put in, it's nuts. They've actually got, I was only kind of looking up on Red Dead and they've actually like 5 world records. And I was like, what's this all about? They've 2,000 developers developing that game.
Jesus Christ.
2,200 hours of motion capture. So to correlate that into time, it was 6 years of motion capture done for that game. There was 1,200 voice actors, which is nuts. And they'd done over 500,000 lines of dialogue for that. Like, that, nuts. They have 227 different species of animal. So these are all world records. Like, it's nuts.
Jesus. Because in the game, you can follow someone from like morning to night. And they, you know, in The Witcher, you follow someone and they're like just on a circle going around the block or whatever. But in Red Dead, you follow someone and they go home and they have dinner with their family and then they go and shower and then they get up and all this kind of shit, which is insane.
It's just that level of detail. It's just nuts.
Now that you say that, I looked at this before and this was like 2 years ago. I was going to play it and then I wanted to play it in German just to improve my German. And I was like, loaded it up and they had like subtitles. I was like, Why don't they have audio in German as well? And now I realize, because it's like, you know, thousands and thousands of hours to re-record in every single language. It's like impossible.
No, nuts.
But man, just to come back to the racing games for a sec, I was just reminded of one story there, which my friend Toby never leaves me live down, right? So we got the sim rigs, right? And if he's listening to this, he probably already knows what story this is. So we got the sim rigs, right? And we were practicing and we were playing a really realistic game called Assetto Corsa Competizione, right? And in this game, you can sign up to like Discords and you can compete in races, right? And there's actual prizes to be won and stuff like this, right? So we were like, look, let's enter a race. Let's do something kind of teamwork-based. We'll do an endurance race and we'll do like a four-hour endurance race, right? So we were like trying to do this track over and over again to get like a competitive time that we could hit every single time, you know? Because obviously if you're 1 second behind over 4 hours, this adds up to like a minute by the end of it and then you're not even in the race anymore, you know? So we started with like, I think it was 50 cars in total, and we started the race and the first like couple of laps are insane because everyone's on top of each other and it's like real damage. If you hit something, you're fucked. Right?
Yeah.
And I think I started the race and I got us through everything, survived like a load of shit shows on the way, like cars piling up and stuff, got us through. And it basically works like a real race. So I have to tell him when I'm pulling into the pits, he then has to be ready to go in his sim rig at home.
Nuts.
And then like I pull into the pits and then he's in the car. They do the pit stop, you take off, and then we can't change until he does a pit stop again. So it's like, it's really exciting. Like, and we were doing this anyway and we were doing really good. We were like 11th out of 50, right? And it was like 15 minutes left. And I think we had done one extra pit stop early, so we didn't have to do one for the rest of the race. So it was looking like we'd get like, you know, seventh or eighth, which is insane because it was our first race. And we did the pit stop. I jumped in the car and took off. And for some reason, like there's a pit limiter in the pits, right? So you have to push your pit limiter on the wheel and it limits you to a certain speed. And you can set this as automatic so that in the pits you're just limited. And I was like, nah, fuck that. I want this to be realistic. I'm going to set mine to manual so I can hit the pit limiter as I'm coming out and get all the excitement, right? Went to take off, just like floored it, hit the 50 kilometers an hour. For some reason, thought my pit limiter was off, pushed the pit limiter to turn it on, which actually released the pit limiter. The car just went over the speed limit for like a second. I just slammed on the brakes and came to like a full stop, put the pit limiter on and took off again. And then it just came up that we had been kicked from the race, disqualified. And he was just on the Discord call and he was like, what? What just happened? I was like, oh no.
But like when you're saying this is over 4 hours, so how long were you actually sat there driving?
So we had to do qualifying, right, beforehand. Then you have a break, you go away, you get something to eat, you come back, and then the race starts. And your qualifying is like, try and put in the best lap you can so that you start at a certain position. The 4 hours was like 4.5 hours. And I think we were doing half an hour stints and then we would swap each time. So basically like you can't say, oh yeah, let's keep it nice and light and swap every 15 minutes because you have to do a pit stop and a pit stop adds like a minute and a half. So you basically have to wait until you just run out of fuel or just run out of tires. And also there's like, you can drive a tiny bit less aggressive and then you might get a bit longer out of the tires and then you might pass someone out based on, you know, doing one less pit stop because it's 2 minutes, you know. And it gets very tactical with the long races. Like you're thinking of so many different things, you know, and then you're also trying not to push too hard, but trying to stay competitive because if you push too hard, obviously, and you have a crash, that's it over. So you have to be safe and within the limits. And it's just like, it's really good fun.
Nail-biting. Really good fun. That sounds really good fun. That sounds
like
good.
It is. And there's like, obviously there's a Discord for it as well. So like some people are getting disqualified and then they're like, you know, there's like shouting matches in the Discord, like, you fucking prick, look what you did here. And like, there's obviously referees managing the whole thing then and stuff. But
what kind of prizes then would they be?
The one we were in was like 100 quid or something like that, something small. But they go up to like 10 grand and stuff like, and what? You have to pay to enter. Some people make a career out of sim racing. Like a lot of the Formula One drivers drive in competition sim racing because it's gotten to that level where it's so realistic, you know.
That is not fair.
They get beaten too, you know? They get beaten too. But yeah,
that sounds like a good crack.
It's really wild. Like, it's like a proper race day out, you know, for half the cost, like, or less than half the cost, fraction of the cost. And obviously, you know, you have to pick your car, you do up your livery and your design. And then before the race, you download everyone's design so you see them on the race and stuff. It's really cool. really cool. Nice community thing, you know.
That's fun. That's like kind of like a hobbyist's dream as well. It's not just scratching that itch from a gamer's point of view, but I mean, like someone who's like really into cars and racing and modifying and like,
yeah,
like, and like during not like mechanically minded.
In COVID as well, you couldn't really do anything with cars because, you know, if you were going somewhere, you had to have a mission to go somewhere, basically. So you couldn't just go for a drive. Like, so this was like a big outlet then for, you know, messing with the cars and toying around with them. And you'd be like, oh, if we lower the tire pressure by, you know, one PSI, we can make them last longer or have better grip or whatever it might be. And like, you also, it depends on the track. Like some tracks are more draining, so they might wear the tires faster and then you have to inflate the tires a bit more to make them last, you know. So there's a big technical side to it. But yeah, that was just something that you brought me back there just asking about the...
How does it work with like... No, because I'm actually quite interested. That sounds awesome. But like, do you have to... Do you start with a balance or do you have to kind of like... Do you have like a pool of money that you need to develop your car with?
No. So you have like... With Assetto Corsa Competizione, you race in a specific league, right? So it's the licensed game for GT3 racing cars. So you basically have a choice of any of these cars, and the cars are very well balanced by the developers so that like some have advantages, but most of the time it's based on what feels best for you. Like there were certain cars now, like we had to decide to go with the Honda NSX, and there was cars that I liked more. Like I loved the Ferrari, Toby loved the McLaren, but when I drove the McLaren, I just couldn't handle it. I just didn't like it. It wasn't intuitive. And when he drove the Ferrari, same thing, he just didn't feel it. So then you also have to find a car that you're both happy with out of these, like, you know, 16-20 cars, which is like a lot of testing. And it's fun to, like, you know, be comparing stuff. Oh, I really like this car with this setup. You try it out, see what you think, and then you're kind of meeting in the middle somewhere. It's really good. It's good fun.
That sounds fun. Yeah, yeah. But you'd really want like a wheel and pedals then.
Yeah, you'd have to have a wheel. The game is unplayable without it because it is very realistic feeling. I know, like, people who hadn't played it are probably thinking, oh yeah, it doesn't feel like a real car. It really does. Like the force feedback is insane these days. It really feels close to it, you know. Obviously you don't have the G forces and stuff, but like it's really 90% of the real feeling, I would say. It's really
That's
cool.
Mad. That sounds like a good car.
It's awesome. It's awesome. But again, like I did sell it due to like space reasons and stuff, but I'd love to get like a proper setup again and do it again. It was such good crack.
Like, seen like crazy, crazy setup. Because there's one now I've obviously seen and shown you was Elite Dangerous, where he's got like a big wraparound screen.
Yeah,
and I've seen ones
actually
with planes.
Like a spaceship.
Yeah, or like he's extra monitors up, you know, for his control panels. But I've seen ones now for like people who've like flight sims, who actually have like a proper, like they have an actual cockpit in their sitting room with their screens and monitors up. Or I've seen him with cars as well, like, and you're like, there's a guy, I'll have to find that, like, so many videos now to put up. There's one, and he's in kind of like a shed or a hangar, so it's a big open area, but his car sim is there, and it drives on itself, so it's like got like, let's say, three wheels, it's got a wheel on the back anyway that is sideways. So when he turns, the whole vehicle spins around.
Cool.
It's nuts. And he's got nitrous oxide in it, but there's like this giant kind of like a jackhammer. I'll get it for you. It is ridiculous. So he's got like a nitrous boost. So when he pushes nitrous, there's like this kind of like a counterweight that goes off in the back, and it actually kind of knocks him like, and you
That's
see
crazy.
Everything like full. Yeah, it's nuts. Like I love it.
Ultimate dream would be to have like a crazy PC and be able to run them in VR, because they're just too challenging in VR on like a normal PC. But to be able to run them in VR and also have like a sim rig that's like motion control, so it has the small hydraulics on each end, and then when you're accelerating it leans back and so on, that would be like the dream. But like the sim racing, like I would say you could get into it pretty reasonably. Like if you had, let's say, if you already had the PC and stuff and you spent like €500 on like a decent wheel, pedals, and like a temporary foldable sim racing setup, you could have a really good time on that for like €500. For like €1,500 to €2,000, you pick up like a solid rig with like slightly better pedals, slightly better wheel. And then anything after that, you're kind of spending €3,000-4,000 to get like 2% difference in feeling. You know, it's like diminishing returns after that. So it's not like as expensive, but you can really go deep.
Well, if you got a fully fledged car in your sitting room, well, I do a little bit of gaming.
But no, that's something I have to get back into eventually. Anyway. But I have just one more game that I want to talk about that I always kind of go back to. And this brings me back to kind of being a kid. And I remember, like, we would get the... I know. Being a physical kid, let's say. Back in the day, you used to go into, like, HMV Inside in Town or Golden Discs, these music shops, you know? And upstairs, they had, like, the DVD sections. And you'd get, like, box sets of shit, right? For, like, fucking all money. And obviously, this was before, like, Netflix streaming and stuff. So this, like, your box sets were, like, you're binge watching at home, basically. You could have, like, you know, Seinfeld or Futurama, Simpsons, Family Guy, whatever it might be. And I remember specifically, like, I would always rewatch Family Guy, Futurama, American Dad, and The Simpsons, right? And I'd be in my room with my little portable DVD player. And then as I got older, I'd be like going out drinking and stuff. And then when I was hungover the next day, I'd be watching these shows, like in just lying in bed half fucking
The Cure.
Yeah, The Cure, ordering 4-star pizza or Domino's or whatever. And I used to just watch these on repeat, like these shows. So it's like a real comfort for me, you know. And one game that I love coming back to is Futurama. Have you ever played it?
A Futurama game?
Yeah, have you ever played this? Obviously, by your reaction, you haven't.
It's like, no,
the Futurama game? Yes, of course.
No, the Futurama. I remember a Simpsons game that was sky-scrolling.
Right? The Simpsons game? Yes, fine. The Futurama game was next level, right? And not because of its gameplay. It was shite, right? It was shite. But it was shite.
It was no good.
But it was cel-shaded graphics, right? And basically, it's really clever because you play the game and it has the cutscenes and it has all the voice actors and everything. And like it starts off like a Futurama episode, you know? So it's like showing the Daily Express from the outside and then it goes in. And then the professor walks in and he's like, good news, everyone. And it starts off, you know, the quest for the game, basically. And if you go to YouTube and you type in, we'll link it actually in the Discord. If you go to Futurama and you look up all cutscenes Futurama, if you combine all the cutscenes, it's a completely fluid, missing nothing, 30-minute episode. And then the levels are like the bits in between these clips that you don't necessarily need. So there's a hidden episode of Futurama in the game, right? So we'll link it in the Discord anyway. But it's just so cool to play that and get that, like, not just the nostalgia from playing the game, but also all the shows and the references and so on. And big spoilers, you can skip ahead like 15 seconds if you don't want to ruin the game. But basically, the twist is, it's a really good, like, episode as an episode. So basically, at the end of it, they try to fight Mom Corp, right? Or Mother Corp, Mom Corp, I think it's called. The evil grandmother.
Robot. One. Yeah, yeah.
yeah. And they basically have to fight her. And in the end, all the characters die. So everyone in the game dies, right? And then...
Bit morbid.
People will skip ahead now and they'll just hear it. So everyone dies. But the professor then has to go back in time and create a time paradox that resets the timeline. And the ending of the game is that you're back at the start of the game. So it's technically cool. Like an infinite loop that you could replay and replay, which is quite good.
That's quite clever. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my last one. And actually, it almost like didn't happen because Matt Goring hated the game. And the actor that played Bender thought it was a lot of shit. And there was actually a voice line from him that he made saying, this game is garbage or this game is crap or something. And it was cut from the game because of his personal feelings about it, which is crazy.
I think I remember seeing him in an interview, actually, the voice of Bender. And he's like, he does a lot of his, wait, I might be mistaken him for, no, does he do the voice of Rick as well? Rick and
Morty? I don't know, honestly. I don't know. I'm in too deep.
I remember Rick was, the voice actor for Rick anyway. I'm not sure if it's the same who does Bender, but he was actually like, he drinks on set to get into the mindset for Rick.
Jesus, that's kind of dark.
Whether it was just a parody, like, or was it just like, you know, like a skit, but yeah pretty, there he goes
again. Joke.
Like, yeah. And my other game, my final one would have been kind of, again, it's for all the kind of the same reasons as before, as the Assassin's Creed games. I always kind of dip back into them, in particular, obviously the early ones. And it's just
before
just
Black Flag, obviously. Or Black Flag
for
and
me,
before.
Yeah. Black Flag and Unity were like chef's kiss. They were like my favorite Assassin's Creed games. Now, obviously, I liked kind of 1 and 2. 3, I wasn't too gone on, which was Connor.
I liked 3.
The American Revolution one.
I liked 3.
Do you know what? I must replay it, but I don't. The thing I actually miss about those games, do you know, there was a real sense of kind of mystery, as in even like there's, and because I was, do you know Syndicate?
Mm-hmm. Sure,
like,
sure.
On Syndicate, like you go around the city and you've actual, you come across these kind of, what would you call it? Kind of like masonry work in buildings, which has mm-hmm. kind of like an upside down skull in it. And it kind of, you can interact with it and it'll open up like a secret passage in where you can do a puzzle to get a mm-hmm. key or a coin, a disc to unlock the, kind of the better armor in the game. And I just missed that about kind of all those games, as in like, from the first game right up until Black Flag, and even Syndicate was, I'm not sure if Syndicate was before Black Flag, I think it was. But basically those, but where it kind of went on to like Origins and onwards, like it's kind of nice seeing Pharaohs, and but now it's kind of really kind of outside the box with like, you know, like you're fighting Anubis, like a god. Or,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's gone so far above.
It's not like like you're exploring a tomb where something might have happened. It's like you're now fighting this giant god who's running around the desert kind of thing.
Yeah, and you're getting this armor as well. Like your horse is on fire and your armor is glowing, and it just killed it a little. I didn't like that too much. I think, you know, the worlds and environments, they're pretty, and you obviously get a sense for like going around Egypt and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's not to say that it can go amiss, but I think like if they just kind of stuck with the original kind of concept of what Assassin's Creed was, you know, a fraternity of assassins.
I think the grounded nature, you know, where it's kind of like the Tomb Raider games, where it's not the magic that's happening, it's the mystery of what it could have been, or that something did happen. You know?
It's just
kind of like Indiana Jones Uncharted kind of region.
And that's another one you must play, Indiana Jones, the new one. Because again, yes. I think you'd love it, because it's just that kind of exploration, going into tombs and interacting, little puzzles. I love that. I love that. That's what kind of really draws me back into those kind of games. I love kind of the exploration. I love like the older Assassin's Creed games where, like, I have the Ezio collection. So you're playing the second one again recently, and you're buying up shops and, you know, blacksmiths to draw an income so you can kind of upgrade to your house, kind of
your
mansion. I love that. I love the story. I love the music in the older games. It's just phenomenal.
Speaking of the music, can we just take a moment to appreciate how fucking incredible the first three Assassin's Creed trailers are?
They're unreal.
The release trailers are so
good. The music
good.
In them is Wood Kid.
Yeah.
Iron is one of the songs, I think, was in Revelations.
Man, I don't know. Did the music make the trailer better, or did the trailer make the music better? I don't know which one.
It's fitting, you know. It's just something executed, well thought out, well designed.
No, they're phenomenal. Like every time I watch them, I just get goosebumps. Especially like the trailer for the third one is awesome, in my opinion. Do you know, it's when like you have the civil war going on and all the lads fire, and then like the assassin starts running, and then he can see them loading, and then like he's just making it to a rock before they fire again and sliding behind it. And then he's like instantly jumping out again, and it's like they're all just firing at once every time, you know. And man, it gives me the shivers just thinking about it.
The multiplayer for those games was phenomenal as well. Did you ever get to play? Because I know they seem to die off pretty quickly.
Was there multiplayer? I didn't know there was multiplayer.
It's in a few games, but like the Brotherhood now was probably one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite Assassin's Creed games for the multiplayer. It's like you have a kind of, you know, the Plague Doctor who wear the beats.
Yes. Sure.
So it's brilliant. It's kind of like you have obviously your kind of usual multiplayer. Your usual multiplayer, you know, capture the flag or hold a zone.
Really? So you have like PvP?
Yeah. And basically what happens is that, so you're in a map, so you're constrained in an area. There's NPCs everywhere, and you look like one of the NPCs. So
okay.
You have people who are hunting you, and basically it's kind of like prop hunt. So, and it's unreal. Like, again, we'll put it in the Discord.
Put the link in the Discord.
It was phenomenal. So you'd get little abilities to unlock. So you'd have one now, I can't remember what it was called, Morph or something. So you can go in, stand in to a group of NPCs. So you say there's a cluster of people, and you're, let's say, we'll say it, you're dressed like the Plague Doctor. So you have the beak, mm-hmm. you find other people with the beak. So you hide in this cluster, and you can basically morph. So everyone in that little cluster turns into your costume, and the people hunting you then, they know what you look like. Or no, they don't mm-hmm. they don't know what you look like. But basically they have like a ring, like kind of like a ring that like a compass.
Sure, that, sure, that sure.
It becomes more complete the closer they are to you. So they know you're in an area. They know suddenly see, or you know, they're looking for a plague doctor, so they know there's a cluster there. So if they attack them and kill the wrong person, so if they kill an NPC, it resets. So they get like stunned or locked out, so you get a chance to run and hide again. It's brilliant. It was much fun.
If they're chasing you, it's not like a directional arrow. So if they're chasing you one direction and you go off in another, they don't know if you're kind of running away to the left or to the right. You know,
it's broad unless they're really close to you is when it kind of hones in. So if you're far away, they know you're in this area, but they don't know how far left or how far right you are.
Until
the closer they get. So suddenly, you know, they'll go in one direction. You're like, oh no, he's actually over towards here. Unbelievable. You loved playing it.
I can't believe I never knew about that.
Unreal. And the thing is, you'd have like, you know, you'd have your little pistol on your wrist.
You'd
know there's a person kind of being trying to be sneaky and they're hiding, and next thing you're shooting them across buildings and you just see their corpse then flying off the rooftop. It was so good, man. Or I'd actually love to see if it's still going. I doubt it, to be honest. It died off fairly quickly.
Yeah.
But I loved, man. They were so good.
Lost in time.
So I think that's about it.
Yeah, I think that's...
Unless you have anything to add.
To say, no, I think that's kind of the games I love to replay and why I love to replay them.
And I kind of really want to just jump back on now and see if Assassin's Creed is still working.
I suppose we can leave it there. Do check the show notes of this episode because we will have links to all of our socials plus Discord, where we will be posting clips plus general updates to the podcast plus kind of listener questions and things as time goes on.
Yeah, and we want to hear what you kind of get back and play.
Yeah, plus
what game draws you back.
All of the things we talk about, we do post that they were discussed on the pod in a certain thread within the Discord. So like the videos we're mentioning and so on will be posted in the Discord.
Thank you for listening.
Until the next time.
Until the next time. Bye-bye.
Ciao.